David, I love that candle you're burning. You seem to always have a great candle burn.
I am very aware of how a room smells. When you've spent over a decade with a 75-pound Labrador Retriever and two teenage boys, you start to worry that your house smells like the inside of a gym bag.
I would imagine so.
You know what I wish we'd had for the last decade?
What?
That Puro Air purifier we now own and use all the time.
I love my Puro Air too. Did you know that indoor air quality can be up to 100 times dirtier than outdoor air?
Yes, I lived with two teenage boys. I can 100% testify to that.
In 30 minutes, this device will remove allergens, dust, smoke, dander, and gases from the room.
Gases from a preteen boy?
I'm dreading when my nephews start making those gases.
Just you wait. Thankfully, Puro Air uses a stronger type of filter called HEPA 14 that filters pollutants at a microscopic level and is backed by scientists from Harvard and MIT.
You wouldn't drink unfiltered tap water, so why would you breathe unfiltered air?
Thanks to my Puro Air purifier, I feel like I can breathe again.
Check it out at getpuroair.com. That's GetPuroAir.com.
One more time, getpuroair.com. Check it out now.
Hey friends, welcome to the Raising Boys and Girls podcast. I'm Sissy Goff.
And I'm David Thomas.
And I'm Melissa Trevathan.
And we're so glad you joined us for this conversation. Let's dive in.
Sarah Hagerty is a best-selling author and Jesus follower. She has written four books, including her most recent release, The Gift of Limitations, Finding Beauty in Your Boundaries. Despite laundry baskets overflowing and unending to-do lists, Sarah still squeezes in her early morning runs, walks through the woods next to her house with her children, still little enough to collect acorns, and reading pages and paragraphs of books in the middle minutes. She lives in Missouri with her husband, Nate, and seven children. We can't wait for you to listen in on this conversation with our new friend, Sarah.
Sarah, we are delighted to have you on the podcast.
Yes, we are.
I feel like a long time coming.
And I'm getting to chat with like two of my heroes, which feels
so kind.
Really great.
You're so sweet. We have been grateful for you for
like
a long time.
You guys have been like my parenting coaches and you don't even know it.
You're so kind. Well, we have a mutual person in common. Shout out to the remarkable Jana Munsinger, who has been raving about you to us for the longest time.
Well, and you know what? Actually, now that I think about it, that's how I found you. Well, I may have known of y'all before then, but she's the one who told me years ago, you've got to read their stuff.
So we love that, Jana.
I know.
We do.
Well, we're excited for this conversation to happen. And let's start with your family. Seven kids.
I mean,
I can only today there's still seven.
Seven kids that you homeschool. We don't even know what to say other than please say more.
Really?
Please say more about that.
Well, so I did. One is graduated. Two are almost graduating after that. So, you know, when they get to the high school years, you're doing a lot more oversight than homeschooling. So I'm technically kind of only homeschooling three. But yes, I have a 20-year-old all the way down to a 4-year-old. We had we adopted from Ethiopia, and then 2 years later adopted from Uganda, and then like many years after that, had a bunch of very surprise babies.
Wow.
Yeah.
A bunch.
A bunch indeed.
Oh, that's wonderful. It's so fun to hear about. And I loved being on your website and seeing their photos. And,
yeah.
Which is precious.
They're wonderful.
Yes. Well, we are so excited you wrote a book on limitations. Yes. And I think particularly, I mean, counseling for three decades, we would say, both of us, that we have never seen parents as overscheduled, as exhausted, and feel as much like failures as they do today. And
like so, you could say in the last 5 or 10 years, that's the trajectory you're seeing.
Last 3 years.
Absolutely.
Oh, really? Post-COVID.
Last 3 years. Yes. Mm. Yes.
That's wild.
I know.
It doesn't surprise me, but yeah.
But it feels like your book is so timely because of that. And so we'd love for you to talk more about why you wrote it and what you hope folks will gain from it.
Well, you know, I think sometimes when you see a trend in your heart or life over different landscapes, over different seasons, it starts to get your attention, right? When you go, the landscape has changed, but I'm still feeling all these things. There might be something internal going on. And for me, I look at my early, my 20s into my 30s, we had infertility early on for a long stretch of time. And so I just experienced very early what other people's bodies are doing, my body isn't doing. Their rite of passage is a do not enter sign for me. And so I just felt the limitations of my dreams, like the limitations of my body preventing me from my dreams of being a mom. And I, you know, in some ways, I think I probably left that season thinking that was then and done, right? But then the irony is all these years later, having 7 kids, 4 who've had significant trauma, and I'm having the same inner dialogue that I did back then. It just isn't, the landscape's changed, which is I'm looking at my life and staring over the fence line at the things that I want and cannot have, and I'm grumpy. And it's really, I'm at risk of being soul sick. And so I think this book is, you know, stories of 2 decades of wrestling with limitations and starting to see, you know what, God is actually doing something in them. And I'm not alone because I have lots of friends who don't have 7 kids and they're feeling very similar things. And I have lots of friends who have things that they don't have and they're feeling their limitations in a similar way. I think there's like a universal ache. Like, what do we do with these things that are limiting us?
Yes. Yes.
Well, so, and I want to read this because I love how you say this. You talk about limitations being one of our greatest gifts, but to get there, we have to take a closer look and even to grieve. Can you talk more about just even what this means and how we go about doing that?
Well, I think, I mean, would y'all agree? Like, we just are so pain averse.
Yes.
You know, in the world, but as Christians, yes. I think we really are pain averse. And so we want to skip steps. Like, if I, you know, the title of the book is The Gift of Limitation. So, like, my natural inclination is to be like slapping my face, come on, girl, see this as a gift and let's get there.
Right.
Like, coaching myself. But I think there's a power in grief that really is a transformational power. Like the grief is actually absolutely necessary for me to become the person that God is intending me to be, or that God, to become a person who's meeting with God in this really hard moment. And so in many ways, and I talk about in the book, part of seeing our limitations as a gift, a key part is actually grieving them, is naming them. Because a lot of times we react to them without naming, you know, I think of like the grumpiness that I feel as a mom of 7, and I realize very few of your listeners probably have 7 kids, but you know, can relate to like the grumpiness where you're snappy with your spouse, you're snapping at your kids, you're snapping at your coworkers, and kind of going, something's not right, but I don't really know what. So we react to our limitations. I react to like my house being in chaos. I love order and I love quiet and I have 7 kids and my mudroom has mud. Like, and so I react, but there is a power to slowing down and naming my limitations such that I can actually grieve them with God and say, this is hard. I wanted a lot of kids, but gosh, I didn't think it would be this hard. And this isn't what I imagined this season of my life to be like. And even where are you, God? I think there's something really significant to giving ourselves permission to grieve.
I love that so much. It makes me think about, I talk with kids a lot about, one of my favorite quotes ever is, the deeper that sorrow carves into our being, the more joy we can contain.
Yes.
And it does feel like that. I mean, we have got to go through the grief process to allow God to step into those spaces with us and fill them with joy.
Yes. And I think for me, mentally getting my mind around the idea that grief is important. It is optional, but if we don't choose it, I think it actually, that sorrow that's welling up inside of us that we haven't named ends up gaining more and more power over our lives and our minds and our hearts. You know, I think about, there's a little vignette, broke my ankle and was pregnant. And my mom's sisters were having this big surprise birthday bash for her across the country. For her 70th. My mom is incredibly selfless, like in the way that she's cared for me. She's come when I've had my babies, stayed for 6-7 weeks. She's a widow. My dad had passed away. And I didn't actually realize that it was a surprise party. I think I was in a little bit of a fog, but like it all kind of came together days before that, like everybody's flying in for this. But I have a broken ankle. I can't travel by myself and I'm pregnant and I don't have a traveling companion and I can't be there. And so I am, you know, I'm foggy. I am what we often are when we face our limitations, like foggy, grumpy, can't really think clearly, reacting. And the day of the party, I had a pause and I went, this isn't just the narrative in my head. I have seven kids. I can't do what I want. I have seven kids. I can't go on the girlfriend's trips. I have kids who've been through trauma. We can't do family like we normally do. I sat for a minute and got underneath it and went, oh, that's that feeling again. I don't feel like I belong. Mm. My whole family is gathering and I'm on the outside. Mm. And to sit in that space of grief with God opens me up to more of his presence, of what he wants to say, of how he wants to meet me. And the story becomes different. It's not just, I'm not getting the career that I want. I'm not getting that promotion. Or it's not just, this kid isn't behaving. It's actually underneath it all. There's deep questions we have that I think God really wants to respond to.
Yes. Do you want to set up an office here and start counseling people?
I would like to set up an office here and be counseled by all you people.
Can I tell you what else I love about what you're saying in that too? I'm thinking about a conversation I had with a mom 2 days ago. We did a consultation and they have two biological children and then adopted a boy with really hard circumstances. Mm. And she said, David, in tears, she said, I'm going to be honest with you. Like, I found myself angry. Like, I found myself not saying out loud, but believing, God, I did this hard thing and therefore you shouldn't make it this hard. And so she said, that's nowhere in scripture, you know? And also what I felt in her saying that is reflected in what you're saying of part of grieving means I let myself be angry.
Absolutely.
I let myself be sad. You know, in order to get to any kind of acceptance, I've got to travel all these different emotions. And I love the way you invite parents into that.
I think we are so afraid of having the tantrum because we feel like it's not mature. Like we don't, you know, I shouldn't be angry. When in reality, I think sometimes all of us could stand to be a little more mature in being angry because we're not going to, God in his mercy is like using these hard circumstances to bring us through something. He's not going to let us stay in our anger, but it's anger is like opening the door to grief. It really is. And it's often angry first, right? Like even the fights you have with your spouse, they start with anger, but if you can stay in it long enough, you can get a lot of heart out of that.
Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples.
Yes, for the samples, because seasonal allergies are no joke in the state of Tennessee.
Or Kentucky, where I spend the summers at Hopetown. I spend most of the summer outdoors and could not function without allergy relief.
Luckily, for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D.
This double-action combination of prescription-strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease.
You just described my exact state in waking up, minus the need for coffee.
I've been taking Claritin D for my allergies for years, and it's been an absolute life changer. I can be outside with the kids at camp without my eyes watering like a fountain, and I can speak without feeling like a frog has jumped into my throat.
But at Hopetown, a frog could jump into your boat or your bed, and Claritin can't really help with that.
That's true, but they've got allergies covered. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear.
Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter.
Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription.
Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear.
Use as directed.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
Well, I want to shift gears a little bit because you talked about something else in the book that I really loved that was the productivity fast.
Oh, yes.
Which feels huge in this day and time because not only do parents feel more like failures, but I think exhausted because of moving so fast and doing so much. And so will you talk a little bit about what that looks like?
So I played a little game with myself because I started to notice that I like myself better when I am productive. Mm. I mean, all of us, right? We like ourselves better when our kids are well-behaved. We love being the one at Target, having somebody tell us our kids are polite. We like ourselves better when things run on time. We like ourselves better when we can host a beautiful party. And I had a question deep in my heart, like, I want to find out like how I see myself and how God sees me when I'm not that way. And really, I think I just wanted to go, what if I'm not productive? What about that? So I gave myself a period of time where I went on like a productivity fast. I essentially said, I'm going to pick the most productive hours of my day, which as a mom was like 2 to 4. Kids were in rest time. Those are the times I normally crank out like all the responsibilities of home, some of my responsibilities as a writer. And I went between those hours of the day for a period of time, I'm going to like really vastly limit my task list. And I'm going to, instead of doing 15 things, and normally, like, let's be honest, it's 15 things all at once, right? Like, I'm cooking dinner and responding to texts and listening to a podcast, you know? I'm going to do 2 or 3. And then I'm going to spend the rest of that time taking a walk in the woods or reading poetry or reading literature. Like, not, or reading my Bible, but I wouldn't even, like, let myself call that a quiet time because that felt productive, right? And it was interesting first to find that it's unnerving. Like that was actually what helped me really name. I like myself better when I'm strong, when I feel strong, when I feel like I'm accomplishing things. I like my kids better when, I mean, that's an embarrassing thing to admit. I like my kids better when they perform. Oh, Lord, I don't want to live this way.
Yeah.
And so sitting in that space of just acknowledging, like, I'm super uncomfortable when I'm not productive. Like I feel squirrely. It's sort of like what a Sabbath can do, right? Like when you have a pause and you go, I really like it when I don't have a pause because I feel strong when I'm going. But over time, it's like I started to notice, like, I think bigger thoughts. Like I connect with God and I actually think he likes me when I'm walking in the woods. Like he likes me when dinner is 3 ingredients instead of 20. Like he likes me, or takeout. Like he likes me when the ground beef is sitting dripping off the counter onto the floor and I walk over it to go outside and get in the woods with him. So it felt profound for my heart because at that time I had the choice to do that. But interestingly enough, I think life circumstances and the older we get, there are times where God limits our productivity and we don't have a choice. And to have had that experience and go, God met me and he liked me. And I liked me over time there. Then when he's limiting me because, you know, recently I was diagnosed with Lyme disease and I'm in bed and fatigued, I'm remembering when I'm doing nothing, I'm still his daughter.
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Will you talk more about the concept of surrender as a parent? What does that look like?
No, and
what
I do won't. You think? Come on.
What do you think it does for us?
Oh, I mean, isn't it the journey of every parent? But none of us want to be on it. Like you guys must have people in your office where you look at going, God has you on a path of surrender. And we are all going down kicking and screaming. Like, I think it's one thing to surrender for my own heart and my life, but to watch my kids and the dreams that I have for them and let go of them unto God's dreams. Like, I think right now, so my 10-year-old son also has Lyme disease and he is much sicker than I am.
Sorry.
And it is, I mean, on his hard days, I want to curl up in a ball because we haven't gotten to the end of it and we're not finding the answers. And he's super effervescent and athletic and he's going, Mom, why am I in bed all the time? And yet I feel like in that moment, God is saying to me, do you believe that I have a good story for your life? Like ultimately surrender is, it can be passively active. Like God is leading me on a path to surrender. I don't have to try and push that. The circumstances around me are God's gift. Those limitations around me are God's gift, leading me on a path to surrender that if I stay on it, if I'm willing to submit to it, submit's a rough word, but if I'm willing to just release into it, on the other side of it is me deeply believing God has a good story for my life. It's so hard, though. I mean, I think of something else that I've been praying for years and going, like, I just have been a master on this prayer team. Like, this is going to happen in my life. God's going to move. Like, but underneath it all is just a ton of fear. Like, what if it doesn't? We do this with our kids, right? Mm-hmm. What if they stay wayward? What if they keep struggling with this? What if they don't come around? And in my heart going, I have like been so determined to intercede for this because I'm scared out of my mind of what my story will look like if it doesn't come through. But then to have glimpses over time of slowly letting go, like, what if it doesn't come through? And trying it on. How am I? How am I going to be? And finding that, like, sometimes the greatest liberation that we're all deeply wanting comes when we let go of that thing that we were determined we needed to have a good story. It's like super liberating to go, the story ended up not at all like I wanted it. And you met me. And you're here. And I think I'm starting to believe that there's a good story for me.
So grateful for you saying that. And I mean, really, in terms of therapy, I mean, that's a cognitive behavioral therapy strategy for anxiety.
I just fell into that.
Well, exactly. And I mean, I sat with a mom this week who was so anxious about her daughter on a lot of levels. And one of the things we talked about is schoolwork, that she is panicked that she's struggling as much as she is. And I mean, it's kind of an if-then idea. Okay, if she continues to struggle in this way and you stop sitting with her for 2 hours to do her homework, which is my suggestion in that moment, you know, what's the worst that can happen? And I mean, really, then it was summer school and and she'll be okay.
And sometimes we have to walk through summer school. Like I'm just finding in my own life, specifically with my limitations, like I work so hard to not have the hard thing happen or to overcome the hard thing. And I'm accumulating a photo book of stories, a scrapbook of stories where it happens. Summer school happened, right? And actually, I found a little bit more of God. And I found a little bit more of myself. Like, oh, I want to get back the carefree little girl who wasn't so bent on this one outcome. She's fun.
Yeah. Just so grateful for the reminder for all of us, because we all do. We get attached to these certain things.
Yeah.
And, well, you have another book. You have several other books, but you have another book called Every Bitter Thing is Sweet.
Yes.
I love that title, that talks about when life's expectations do not meet up with reality, which is what we're talking some about now. But again,
it's sort of like every day, right?
I know. and certainly, really, every conversation we have in this place. And so, for the parent who is hearing you talk and feels like, this is my life right now, what encouragement would you give them?
You know, I remember that the verse in Proverbs says, for the satiated soul loathes the honeycomb, but to the hungry soul, every bitter thing is sweet. And I remember we were actually walking through infertility at that time. I remember where I was sitting in my kitchen when I read that for the very first time. It's rare these days that you actually read a verse for the very first time. And it was like I could even see the way the light came through the window. And it was like God just illuminating this moment that I'm going to make you hungry and there's going to be sweetness. And I feel like I need regularly that sage voice in my life, that hand on my back going, girl, God is going to meet you. And even if the very worst happens, you're actually going to grow. You're like you said earlier, our capacity for joy expands the more we grieve. Like, say the worst happens. I think we all need that sage voice in our life going, on the other side of it is a really, really good God. And we use that language a lot. So a lot of us, like me, just have to live it to see it, that it's really true.
Okay, in this season of the podcast, we're talking about ages and stages, and you have lived through a lot of them with your kids. You're still in a lot of them.
You can see my gray hair. Thank you. Not at all. I knew it.
What would you say has been your favorite stage so far and why?
Oh, well, in stage of life for me or stage of life for my children?
For the kids.
For the kids. So, like, I get to do life again. We call them team A and team B. You know, we have 20, 18, 16, and then we have 10, 7, and 4. Wow. So I have a gift of getting to revisit the little years without freaking out about whether they're going to be felons, you know? And I love that. I think living them again, like the years where they are, you know, dirt underneath their fingernails and digging up snails and worms and climbing trees and the wonder, it is like working a number in my soul. Mm. I almost feel like I want to tell every parent who's giving away their baby stuff, like maybe hold on to it because if you, or be, I mean, I'm actually at the age where I could be a grandparent too. Like if you get to do this again, like with them, I just love that. The wonder, like the time where innocence hasn't yet been stolen, knowing that it will be, but just being aware that like there's something powerful in these wonder years. I think of, I read Bonhoeffer. I don't know if either of y'all have read that. And like his childhood, what struck me so much is the childhood that his mom gave him. I wondered if that was part of what gave him resilience because he had such a wonder-filled childhood. So I love the little years. I think that's my favorite.
What's the most challenging?
I can't answer that. I thought I'd love the teenage years because my husband and I worked in youth ministry forever. And I just thought for sure this is my jam. I do teenagers. And I'm going to have like, I think we counted 23 years straight of pairing teenagers, which is part of why I loved your book, the Back Door to Your Teen's Heart. I'm putting a plug in for your
that
book.
That is so kind. You can maybe find it under a rock somewhere.
No, started reselling it. I saw on Amazon. But so I think what the teenage years, what's been challenging is how much I've had to lose myself. Mm. And I didn't realize how much I was holding on to outcomes for my kids until they hit the teenage years. And then I was like, oh, I really have a predetermined path for you that I've never named. And it's really hard.
Well, I would add to that too. I mean, what you just said has been such a universal conversation I've had in my office. I'm curious if you've had that conversation too with so many parents who worked with teenagers.
Oh,
that
really?
Come upon that stage and all of a sudden have the same idea
that feels
of
validating.
I'm going to do great. Like this, I know how to do this. And then they have their own and all of a sudden it feels so hard.
Yes.
And they feel uncool and unconnected and all the things that shock them. Have you had?
That is so true now that you say it. Yeah.
And I think there's something about the kids you've worked with all these years didn't need to individuate
from you. They didn't call
you
mom and dad. That's it. That's exactly right. They went home and they talked to me about the hard things about their parents. Right.
Exactly. Exactly. And they're individuating from you.
Right.
In your adolescent years,
that
and they
is,
have to.
Yes. Keep writing books about the teenage years because people aren't talking about it enough.
Well, along those lines, what would you say is some of the best parenting advice you've received?
I remember a mentor saying to me as her daughter was graduating, I realized there were a ton of things I never taught her.
Mm.
And that was where God was going to have to come in.
Wow.
And that has stuck with me. I mean, I've gotten lots of parenting advice over the years, but that has stuck with me as to the notion that our gaps could actually be the opportunity of God as parents. We, and especially in our culture now, I mean, we're on every app possible trying to optimize our children's existence. We want to do the best birthday parties, with the best graduation parties, with best college application, all of it. And it feels pretty countercultural to like receive that advice that like actually the things that I'm going to miss are going to be God's for them. Beautiful. Like that he'll fill it in.
Well, we're so sad this is even coming to an end. It's been so fun to have a conversation with you. You're so thoughtful and have such depth. And I really am serious about, we'll just throw you up a sign here and you can start meeting with folks. But for anybody who's not familiar with your work, where can they find and follow along with all that
you're
doing?
Well, I'm online at sarahhegarty.net.
Okay.
I'm also
Sarah with no H.
No H.
But there's
an
H in Hager.
My name.
Right.
All single letters. No double G's in my last name.
Okay.
I'm also on Instagram at Sarah Hegarty Writes. And I do write on Substack, which is kind of a new fun thing. It's called Soar, and I have a Substack page.
Cool.
Love that. Okay, we'd like to end with something fun and food related. We got a two-part question for you. Queso or guac, and what's your favorite taco?
Absolutely guac, no question. And steak tacos.
Ooh.
Is that carne asada? Those are hands down. Do you guys have a place around here I can run and get them?
That's a great question. Yes, we do.
Amazing options.
We got some good suggestions.
And if we come your way, can we have one with you?
Yes. Come to Kansas City.
We would love to. Sarah. It's such a gift to have time with you.
Thank you. Thank you for this time.
Yes,
it's been a real blessing.
Thank you for us too.
Did you love today's episode? If so, would you mind sharing it with a friend? Send a quick text or email with the link to the show.
Join us next time for another episode where we'll bring you help and hope on your journey of raising boys and girls.